Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty, an industry podcast for loyalty marketing professionals. I'm Paula Thomas, the founder and CEO of Let's Talk Loyalty, and also now Loyalty TV. Today's episode is hosted by Amanda Cromhout, the founder of Truth, an international loyalty consultancy, and the author of the book Blind Loyalty, 101 Loyalty Concepts Radically Simplified. If you work in loyalty marketing, you can watch our latest video interviews every Thursday on www.loyalty.tv. And of course, you can also listen to Let's Talk Loyalty every Tuesday, every Wednesday, and every Thursday to learn the latest ideas from loyalty experts around the world. Just before we share today's episode, I want to ask you to sign up to the Let's Talk Loyalty email newsletter. Our email newsletter is by far the best way for us to keep you up to date with all of the latest incredible loyalty stories we're sharing each week. It's also the easiest place for you to find our show notes, with links to everything mentioned in all of the episodes. You can sign up at letstalkloyalty.com.
Hi, I'm Amanda Cromhout from Truth, and I have the absolute pleasure today of talking to the individuals who have produced one of the most fantastic white papers in the loyalty industry that gets released today. So What Britons Want from Loyalty is released by Mando Connect with YouGov. So today's podcast is an interview with Charlie Hills, the Chief Strategy Officer of Mando Connect, and her colleague, James Davies, the Senior Strategist and Analyst at Mando Connect. We also have Nick Fishbourne, who's the Group Account Director from YouGov. The three main takeouts from the white paper are that Britons are using loyalty programs more, and they're actively holding more program memberships and using those memberships in a deeper way. And thirdly, there's an absolute explosion into the marketplace of partnerships that benefit both the consumer and, of course, the brand itself. The white paper also investigates key transactional metrics and key emotional metrics. So for a real feast in terms of what Brits want from loyalty, enjoy this podcast on Let's Talk Loyalty. So there's absolutely nothing quite like a little bit of fabulous research coming from Great Britain. And today we have the best people to talk about that. So I'm welcoming three people to talk to today: Charlie Hills and James Davies from Mando Connect and Nick Fishbourne from YouGov. Welcome to all of you. What an absolute privilege to have you on the show.
Hello.
Oh, thanks for having us. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much I need to ask you, so I'm going to go straight into it, but I'd be absolutely remiss of me not to get a threesome answer to what's your favourite loyalty program. So let's start with ladies first. Charlie, you're no stranger to the Let's Talk Loyalty show. So as a guest rather than a host, what's your favourite loyalty program?
Oh my God, it's so exciting to be asked this question. And anyone who knows me that I change my mind every week because I am a super loyalty nerd. So a program I want to talk about, which I think is so interesting because of positive disruption, is Beauty Pie. I think it's a really interesting proposition. It's a subscription model. It's got hybrid promotional overlays. It's got member pricing. It's got member referrals. It's got some fantastic kind of free products and benefits as part of it. And I think what's really interesting is in the last sort of 12 months, they're really, you can see the innovation in the program. You can see them bringing in members weeks. You can see them trialing different new things. And then what I love about the program as a loyalty nerd, as well as obviously a huge fan of the products, is that every time they do something, you can then see it applied really smartly sort of 3 or 4 months later, and they're constantly optimizing it. I think that's one of my favorite things about the program. So yeah, definitely Beauty Pie. If you're not aware of it, check it out. 3 or 4 years ago, we'd have been arguing, is it a subscription program or a loyalty program? program, and I think it's firmly both. So a beauty answer for my lady's first question. I will hand over to my colleague James. What's yours?
Yeah, I think mine does change kind of weekly as well, depending on what we're working on. But I think one of the most interesting programs at the moment, and quite topical, is the Paddock by Red Bull Racing, which I know has been a guest previously on the show. But I just really like, and think they do a really good job of dealing with their kind of different audiences that you have in F1 at the moment. You kind of obviously have those kind of diehard fans that want something very, very different from those people who have maybe watched Drive to Survive fairly recently and literally just being kind of introduced to the sport. So I think they do a really good job of actually kind of tackling those two different audiences in a really, really kind of brand appropriate way.
Beautiful. I love it. God, I'm getting some new ones here. This is great. Nick?
Well, as someone that sits outside of the industry, I'm afraid I'm not going too niche or left field here. But to give you some context, I mean, I have three small children and a full-time job. So my bandwidth for leaning into loyalty programs is somewhat limited. So I have to say my favorite is Tesco's Club Card. And that's primarily because it takes very little resource for me to leverage it. We do our shopping online. I'm automatically logged in, so I get access to the member pricing. And interestingly, I saw in the white paper when I read it a few weeks back that Tesco are under investigation at the moment by the CMA for not showing unit breakdowns in their pricing. And interestingly, I had actually noticed that. You almost have to just take their word for it, that it's a good deal, you know, or get your calculator out and work out, you know, what the cost per gram or milliliter is. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what impact that has across the industry over the next few months.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's all three of you that what you've mentioned, I always do at this part of the show, a quick reference to 100 favorite loyalty programs in chapter 100 of blind loyalty, and actually only Tesco's out of your three as are mentioned. So for everyone listening, that's two new ones for us to add to a even longer list. So that's super exciting. And yeah, Nick, we'll be all watching that. I think the whole world will be watching the outcome of that investigation without question. I've made many a reference to it, so let's see what happens. So thanks for that. That's great. Three programs, that one of which I think everyone knows about, and the other two do know about now. So before we get into unpacking what I think is an awaited white paper every year, would it be super useful if you could very briefly just introduce yourselves and the roles you play, and a quick synopsis of why, Nick's already admitted he's not a loyalty nerd and he's not a loyalty person, but it's interesting to know why you're on the show in terms of your knowledge that is relevant for the loyalty industry. So let's actually start with you, Nick. Quick introduction to you as Nick in terms of your career and what brings you here today.
Yeah, thanks. So I work for YouGov. We're a global research data and analytics group. I've been there for about 3 years now, three and a bit, but I've been working with Charlie and the team at Mando, including James, for all of that time. And we've partnered on a number of white papers, and this is our latest iteration. For anyone not familiar with YouGov, we have millions of panelists worldwide. That's where we get our data from. I think we have just over 25 million now.
It's incredible.
But our products and our services, we work with the world's most recognized brands, agencies, media owners, and we help them to plan, activate, and track their marketing activities, essentially. That's what it boils down to. Our role here in this white paper is to provide the data that's fueled much of the insight that we'll be hearing about today.
Yeah, lovely. I see from the little bit of research I've done, excuse the pun, research on research, that you call it living data. I love that. It makes it really light.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, as a company, we've been around for over 20 years now. So we've been collecting data for all of that time. And because we have really high retention rates on the panel, we're constantly collecting data from the same people, which means we can understand how things change over time, our perceptions and attitudes change over time, and crucially, how consumer behavior changes.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. Thanks, Nick. Thank you. James?
Yep. So I've been with Maddo Connect for the last 5 years. I kind of started in the partnership team where we're actually kind of delivering loyalty rewards for some of the biggest kind of loyalty programs in the UK. And actually 2 years ago, I switched into the strategy team to work with Charlie as a kind of senior strategist and analyst. So it's been fascinating to kind of go from actual delivery through to the thinking behind actually how we design and kind of initiate some of these new programs for kind of clients in the UK and abroad.
I think that's the right way around, hey James, because you get the practical knowledge and you really kind of get your roll your sleeves up before you sit behind a beautiful big desk describing strategic imperatives. So well done you, because you can actually see the reality of what you're strategizing about.
Yeah, it's definitely more fun than the strategy, though.
I'm sure your colleague in implementation might fight you on that one, but anyway. And Charlie doesn't need much of an introduction to the Let's Talk Loyalty audience for the reasons, not just because she's the host of one of the Let's Talk Loyalty shows once a month, but also because you've been featured a few times on here, Charlie. But just give us a quick background into your rise through loyalty, and then I'm going to ask you to follow on if you can to give us a bit of a broader overview of Maddo Connect.
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. It's so awesome being interviewed rather than interviewing. It's fabulous. It's lovely. I hope everyone, hello to everyone who's listening. So I'm Charlie Hills. Hopefully you know me. I co-founded Maddo Connect, which is a loyalty specialist partnerships and rewards agency for WPP back in 2017. And a huge part of what I have always been passionate about, and I think the thread that runs through my whole career, is about smart use of data and insight to make better and more informed decisions. And that really is one of the founding principles of Maddo Connect. We're really passionate about understanding what people actually want, about researching regularly and talking to people on the front line and talking to people to understand what they want from loyalty programs. And then critically, applying that insight into action. It's one of the things I love about Beauty Pie. You know, you can learn as much as you do, but then you do it, you learn from it, and you optimize and you innovate it. And since we founded Connect back in 2017, we've worked with YouGov as a brilliant research partner. We all have it on our desktops. We use it daily, the data updates weekly, and it's a fantastic resource for us. And I, you know, obviously Nick and I have done a lot of papers together and a lot of presentations together, but I cannot recommend them highly enough as a research partner for the adaptability as well and the flexibility that they bring. And we really get live living data that we can then use. So research is a huge part of what we do at Maddo Connect. And then how we apply that is in partnerships and rewards for loyalty programs. I'm a huge loyalty nerd. I started my career back at Boots Advantage Card, fresh out of Warwick University doing the Boots graduate program. And I've stayed kind of in that vein ever since. I think it's a fascinating industry and a fascinating sector. And what we've seen in the last sort of, 7 years since we founded Connect is a huge rise in programs doing interesting things in brand partnerships and actually using them across the entire loyalty lifecycle, but also across those broad range of loyalty metrics and KPIs that are so important. So partnerships for acquisition, partnerships to re-engage lapsed members, partnerships for promotions, partner rewards, which is a huge part of what we do at Maddo Connect. So I think it's a really interesting time to be in this industry. And every year we do this research. We also use it weekly, but we just do the big, you know, one big show pony a year where we talk about the kind of national average. We also publish now European research, which we also do with YouGov. So I can't underestimate the importance of it and my passion for sharing it. Hence why I think the Let's Talk Loyalty podcast is such a great format. So you're going to hear all about the research today on it, but please do follow up and get in touch questions. You know, we can look at all this data at a brand level, at a segment level, at a sector level, at a psychographic level, at a demographic level. We can really dig into it. And Nick will talk to you more about what's available, but it's here. We want to share it. We want to do better as an industry. And that's, you know, really what motivates us all.
You can definitely tell, Charlie, you're a data nerd. Your whole excitement went up when you started talking about data.
I know. It's really embarrassing to see me with infographics. It's fabulous. Properly shameful. I need to get out more.
That's fabulous. Well, I'm actually going to stop you talking about the data and let Nick speak in a moment. But it's quite interesting. You started your career in Boots, and then I ask you on the spot, mm-hmm. what's your favourite programme? And it's still Beauty, so through Beauty Pie. So that's cool. It's obviously stuck in your veins. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's switch to the real data discussion, not to dismiss Charlie's data capability. So, Nick, I'm also fascinated by research. We do a lot down in our market as well, similar to this, but I don't know enough about how you approach it. So I think it'd be absolutely awesome if you can share with the Let's Talk Loyalty listeners your research methodology that makes this so much of a solid, I assume, longitudinal study as well, because you've been doing it over time. So, yeah, can you unpack a little bit of that? Because there'll be a lot of research and data nerds listening in who, you know, really do understand how to do this properly. And it'd be great if you could share that, please.
Yeah, of course. So the data comes from one of our flagship syndicated data products called Profiles, YouGov Profiles. The easiest way to get your head around this platform is to think of it as an enormous interactive data bank. So in the UK Profiles platform, it's made up of data from our most active panelists. So we have data from about 300,000 people in the platform. And they're our most active panelists from the UK panel membership, which is about 2.5 million now. Now, I think as Charlie mentioned, we're collecting data all the time, every single day, but we update the Profiles platform on a weekly basis. It's what we call a 12-month moving average of data. So each week we take on new data from that week and we drop off the data from 52 weeks ago. So the data is always up to date, it's always fresh, it's always living, as you've said. What data do we have on these people? To give you an idea of the scale or the depth, I should say, of what we have, there's about 240,000 different data points within the platform. So as I touched on earlier, we have really high retention rates for our panelists, which means over time we can collect really broad, robust data set on each individual. When people sign up to the panel, obviously we're asking them kind of standard demographic questions, but we might also ask things like your media consumption, where do you shop, who do you bank with, what sport do you play, what sport do you follow? Of course, what loyalty programs are you members of? But one of the real powers of Profiles is that we can recontact the people that provide their data for this platform. So if, for example, you've got an audience in there of people that are a member of a certain loyalty program that's just launched, well, we can recontact them and ask them additional questions. You know, why are you a member of it? How much do you engage with it? Would you recommend it? How do you think they can improve it? And that provides really, really valuable insight for our clients. So predominantly, Profiles is an audience analytics platform, allows you to profile audiences. But it's also more than that. It's interactive and it can drive a huge amount of insight for clients.
Sure. Phenomenal. Like, I'm very used to data and research, but that's like mind-blowing. Well done. It's amazing. I can see why so much focus is placed on this to produce fabulous white papers. So thank you for sharing that. So I'm going to switch the conversation to the white paper now. So Charlie, I know from the past, this is definitely not your first gig at something like this. So can you give us a little bit of a history of this white paper? I know it's expanded as well, and we're going to be talking shortly in a few weeks around Europe outside of the British marketplace, but tell us a little bit about the history and how many editions you've had, and then we'll get into the insights.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for asking the question. It's really been, it sounds silly, I definitely need to get out more. It's been a lifelong quest, I think, for proper research and insight in order to make those smart decisions. And when Joe, Becky and I founded Connect back in 2017, it was glaringly obvious that at a market level, there wasn't a Bible. So we looked, you know, we looked at fantastic research in South Africa. We looked at fantastic research in America. We looked at what's happening in Australia. You know, there were lots and lots of reports, but Britain has long been held up as one of the most sophisticated, diverse, complex, you know, loyalty markets in the world. And, you know, almost on day one, it was like, right, well, what's out there? And the answer was a big, fat nothing. There were client-specific reports, segment-specific reports, but there was nothing that actually said what's happening in the British market. And so we were looking for insight providers. We obviously looked at everybody that was available and sort of fell in love with YouGov for the breadth and depth of the information. So as Nick has talked about, you know, there's nothing like it's live, it's weekly, it's a huge sample. We use it for partnerships. You know, we can look at, you know, what brand, what their relationship is, the brand that we're working on behalf of, but also what other brands do they like and love and what do they like to do in life? And we use that to make those decisions robust. So if we're doing a grocery partnership for a loyalty program, we use that data to inform which grocery it should be and why. And we're looking at, you know, who shops where, what do they think of them, what's their value perception of them, do they like them? And it's robust. It doesn't by any means limit the creativity. It just gives you the creativity and the innovation in the right space. So that was where we started. And then in 2017, I basically had a crazy idea, which was I'd really like to write a report on loyalty for the nation. And I was lucky enough to have a very supportive CEO. And I went over and I bought coffees for the head of data products at YouGov. It was, you know, it's a very exciting pitch, and sort of Dragon's Den'd it and said, look, this is what I think we could do with a white paper. This is the impact I think it would have on the industry. This is the impact it would help for me founding an agency, you know, bring us fame and fortune and all the glories that go with. And this is what we think it could do for YouGov in a very kind of partnership space. It could open up a new avenue for YouGov. And I was lucky. I'd love to say it was a big strategic move. It was the right idea at the right moment in time. And since then, we've gone from strength to strength. So we did what the British want from loyalty programs in year one. In 2018, we published it. We've then alternated between loyalty and promotions since then. So this is actually the fourth edition of what the British want from loyalty papers. And every year, we sit down with our clients, with industry thought leaders, and ask them what are the hot topics. So we have some core data points that run throughout all of them: membership, appeal, impact, the role of loyalty, the types of mechanics, you know, the number of programs people are a member of. But every year we look at, you know, what are the hot topics this year and what do people need to know? And we don't limit it. We don't limit it to our clients. We share it freely with everybody. We share it across WPP. We share it on formats like today because we genuinely believe that actually we can all do better. And as we say, as the industry does better, every program does better. So this year we've added in topics more on promotions, we've added in more on brand partnerships, which has been a hot theme across every conference that we've all been to, as brands are struggling, you know, and programs are struggling to achieve more for less. We've looked at sustainability, we've looked at our popularity contests, we've looked at what kind of bonds, you know, drive people into loyalty programs. So that's the history of the research. And then, as we said, in 2023, we looked up and went, it's actually really important that we look at what else is going on across the world. My big ambition is to do a big global report. But for now, we're looking at Europe as a really natural complement to the fantastic Truth research, the Australian research, the American research, and all those other views.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, a fourth edition, I know what it takes to pull one of these together, and working with a partner like you have with YouGov, I know how important that is. So well done. I mean,
Thank you.
I'm sure the marketplace is extremely grateful. So let's get into what are those key insights. If you were to try and explain briefly on a podcast to the global world of loyalty, what would you say are those key insights?
Oh, please download and read the paper. It's available on the Mando website, and we'll obviously put all the links in the bio, because what I'll do is I was trying to think about what are the most interesting things in the paper, and I could talk about this for hours, but I promise I won't. So I think the big things that I've picked out to share this year is firstly how extraordinary the step change in loyalty has been in the last 2 years in the British market. So what we saw during the pandemic was a drop off in loyalty. And actually, we've come back to more than pre-pandemic levels. And I think that's been driven by a number of factors. We've seen consumer demand significantly increase. We're seeing a significant cost of living crisis in the British market, a recession, and some real challenges on people's household budgets. And what that's done is we've seen huge shifts in the data to the propensity to engage in loyalty programs, claim rewards, active rates are up. People are genuinely using loyalty programs and the benefits that they get to make their lives better. You know, if they can't afford to go to the cinema with their kids in the way that they would have done before, they're turning to their loyalty program to get those kind of free benefits and rewards. So consumer demand peaked. The technology is finally catching up with all the promises that it had around personalization and relevance and gamification. We've seen a huge demand from businesses and brands as they've suddenly realized that what loyalty programs do best, they really need. You know, to keep their existing customers is so important. To offer high value, you know, reward and recognition to those bases is so important. And of course, first and zero party data as that world is changing as well. And then we've also seen, and I hope this is partly we've helped contribute towards this, a real rise in loyalty programs going up the agenda. So whereas 10, 20 years ago, you know, loyalty was a small department in, you know, the second office over to the left, actually loyalty is really at the top table now. We've got some really smart programs. We've got some really brilliant people working in those senior roles. They've got some great insight. And I think all of that has contributed to loyalty going a bit nuts, if I'm completely honest. Mm. Like the British public have gone a bit Taylor Swift about their loyalty programs. So to chuck out a couple of stats, because I know that's what everybody wants. We've seen an extraordinary 79% of the British adult population are now members of at least one program. That's up from 70% 2 years ago. My favorite stat is that 97% of the British adult population are fans of at least one loyalty program, up from 86% 2 years ago. 97, right? I think that's extraordinary. That's almost complete saturation of I like loyalty programs in a market. And when you think how different that would look in other markets, it's extraordinary. We've got nearly three quarters, so 74% thinking that loyalty programs are a great way for brands and businesses to reward their customers, up from 70% 2 years ago. And 54% of our British adult population actually think that every single brand should have a loyalty program. And I think that's, you know, more than half the people are saying, I want one, I want one, I want one. And that for me is an indicator of saturation. Yeah. I think if we start to see drops off in that, then actually we need to start getting a bit worried. But we've seen a whole array of new programs launch in the last 2 years from, you know, massive brands in the British market, you know, McDonald's, Asda, Robert Dias, you know, kind of stalwarts of the high street, Pret, and all launching different kind of programs. And people are still saying, I want more, you know, I want more. So the Brits have gone nuts for loyalty programs in the last 2 years. And that's brilliant to see personally, because obviously we work in the right industry. So that was my number one. My number two was about what that membership looks like. I often get asked about, you know, is a loyalty program the right thing for us? And Amanda, I know you face that question with a lot of brands that you work from, you know, and actually, you know, who's doing it really well? And I think what's so interesting in the British market is we've got a savvy consumer base who are active members of programs. So the average Brit is now a member of 6 loyalty programs. And that's what they're asked in research. So the reality is they've probably joined a few more over the years, but the average is 6, and that's up from 4 2 years ago. What we introduced this year, which was James's brilliant idea, was we were trying to find a way of measuring active rates and actually defining what an active rate would look like. And so we've asked the British public, and they've told us that they're active in 3 programs. And how we defined active rate was any form of activity, because there's so much variation from, you know, grocery to telco to media to cinema to entertainment. So any form of activity in the program, 3 they're active in. And so we've got an average active rate in the British market of 51%, which I think is extraordinary when you think about actually, you know, what loyalty programs are set up to do. So 51% is an average active rate. So that was my second one. So people are doing a lot. I then struggled to pick up my number 3 because there are so many interesting things in the paper, and I do encourage you to check it out. You know, impact of cost of living crisis. We've got a brilliant popularity index. You know, Nick is right. Tesco Club Card is the most popular program in Britain. Points still dominates from a mechanics point of view. Savviness is still really important. So 59.7% of Brits are saying, give me rewards that get me money. partner rewards are still hugely popular. You know, almost a third of the British public will join a program just to get partner rewards, so 30%. And then we continue to look at really important things like sustainability. So 71% of people are saying it's really important that loyalty programs help people live more sustainably and support the environment. We've seen a big rise in promotions. So nearly three quarters of people who are members of loyalty programs take part in promotions, which is significantly more than people who aren't. But my third one and my kind of key point, and I know we're going to talk about impact later, is about the rise of partnerships. And I was saying, Amanda, this does feel slightly self-serving because obviously I run a partnerships and rewards agency, but I promise it's a hot topic from thought leaders across the industry. It's at all the conferences now. And what we've seen is a rise in breadth and depth and smartness of partnerships and loyalty. So 10 years ago, partnerships and loyalty meant coalition. Yeah. And now it doesn't. You know, we've identified in this research 8 different types of ways that loyalty programs are using from partnerships. So retention and partner rewards, promotions, coalitions, but coalitions big and small, you know, those big formal coalitions, but actually we're now seeing smaller coalitions as well. Corporate social responsibility, partnerships for acquisition to bring in new members and obviously re-engage lapsed members, revenue generation, innovation and sponsorship. So we've seen, you know, a huge rise in the sophistication of partnerships. And then within that, some really interesting things about what types of brand partners, you know, the British public want at the moment. So 54% of them want loyalty programs to be doing partnerships with really big brands that they know really well. There's a real confidence deficit in the British market at the moment. And big brands I know well is more important than ever. We've also gone a bit British. So 30% are saying they only want partnerships with British brands, which genuinely quite surprised me.
Yeah.
I tend to think, you know, actually that breadth and depth is really key. But again, it's about brands I know, brands I feel comfortable with. And actually what again was quite surprising is that then we see value. So in a lot of the other metrics, value is right up at the top because of the cost of living crisis. But in your choice of brand partner, value is third. So 26% want partnerships with brands that are offering really good value. And again, that's a huge shift for us in the British market. You know, we might have been a bit snooty before. We might have only wanted the premium brand partnerships, but actually the public are kind of gone, no, what I want is big brands I trust, British brands, and then value brands. And I think that's quite a shake-up in the industry. That's a big change from sort of 5 years ago. So those are my big three. Membership's gone nuts. Actually, breadth of membership is really, really key. And then partnerships is really important and an interesting kind of insight into what types of brands they want.
Well, thank you. I want to touch on partnerships in a moment with James, so I'll come back to that. But what I really loved also, and selfishly just thinking about what happens in the South African market as a comparison, because it's a totally different market. And yet there's so many of the stats are comparable, but Nick is probably like cursing me here because it's not comparable because it's not the same research. But like, I see, you know, you make reference to the youth being less engaged than the general population. But I do see in some of the data that you've got differences across gender that we don't see in South Africa. We see male and females acting the same. So the South African male seems to be more aligned to the South African female in terms of their loyalty usage. And So usage stats are different in South Africa. There's a higher usage stat than what you see in the UK, but I think you've got a more aggressive market, more choice and so forth. So that would make absolute sense. But today isn't about a comparison, but there's just the key things when you were talking really hit me. Yeah. So,
but I think those comparisons are fascinating because then you can try and look at and explore, well, why is it different in that market? And critically, what can we learn from that market?
Yeah.
You know, traditionally, if we talk about gender, we've really struggled in the British market to engage a male audience. You know, it's the theory was always that because the biggest sectors were supermarkets, Boots, Advantage Card and Co-op, that actually maybe that had a factor. Who knows? Nobody really knew why. But then what we've seen in the last 2 years is a massive increase. So we've got 74% of our male adult population in the British market are now members of at least one program. You know, that's significantly increased. And we've seen big increases in youth as well. My personal theory on it is that actually programs are starting to think smarter. So they're actually trying to understand what those audiences want, what's different about them, and tailor their props to it. I also think there's a natural rise in demand in a cost of living crisis. But yeah, it's interesting. I'd love to, but we'll get into that on another podcast. I'm sure there's a lot we can learn from each other's research and markets.
Absolutely. So James, I really do want to understand the you know, as Charlie says, there's been an absolute explosion of brand partnerships. And in the paper, you unpack all those different types of partnerships, which I think is absolutely beautifully spelled out. So can you talk us through a little bit of that, you know, the rise of the partnerships that you've seen in the British market?
Yeah. So as Charlie said, it's been such a significant change that we felt we wanted to really devote a good chunk of the white paper this year, specifically to kind of brand partnerships within loyalty. And we've added a few extra questions in from previous years. And I think the really nice thing is that we've seen this lovely kind of dual benefit for both consumers who say actually they really enjoy it when loyalty programs offer partner rewards. Actually, we saw in the research this year that 63% said that they wanted to see kind of partner rewards as part of that overall mix. So the majority of the Brits actually want to see those rewards within programs. And they also told us why they like to see those kind of brand partners. The three kind of top things which came back were the fact that actually utilizing those kind of partnerships increased the variety for consumers. They increased the ability to kind of treat them and offered kind of greater value. And I think especially within the kind of the cost of living crisis, those kind of value and treats that partners can offer has been such a valuable thing that programs have been able to kind of leverage. So it's a really nice kind of consumer benefit. But on the flip side, actually, program owners really enjoy using partnerships as well. They offer kind of great value. We've kind of highlighted some of the big benefits that we've seen, just the ability to actually offer consumers more for less, whether that's kind of combining resource or just kind of generally returning a bit more of a higher ROI versus kind of traditional marketing channels. The ability to kind of tap into kind of more customers, so actually finding new ideal customers through brand partnerships, leveraging brand affinity, and then also that point around actually just being able to use the partner brand to kind of increase appeal, relevancy, and variety.
Yeah,
it's that lovely kind of dual benefit on the consumer side and the program side as well.
So I always talk about like a tripartite benefit, actually, because it's got to be a win for the brand, a win for the partners, whoever they are, and a win for the customer. You know, because if it's a win just for the brand and the partners aren't benefiting, it's not going to have longevity. And if it's a win for the customer but not the brand, it's not going to make sense in the long term either. So absolutely, it's we speak to so many program operators who have partnerships, and they all say exactly the same thing. I think there's an old quote from Brian Pearson around in his Loyalty Leap book from many years ago, where he says we've got to teach the elephants to dance, so that the big brands aren't the bullies in the room, and they appreciate the partnerships with the smaller players. They're prepared to dance with the smaller players. So there's a lot of history in this. It's not like this is new, right? As Curly says, all the conferences are talking about it, but what's coming through in your data, coming through in this white paper, is, yeah, it's not new, but wow, is it important for A, the brands, and B, the consumers. So James, can you give us a couple of case studies that'll bring this to life? I know you do feature some really fantastic brands in here. So talk us through those, please.
Yes, we've included four examples within the white paper, each kind of looking at four of those kind of big benefits. And again, the interesting thing is when you look at those kind of the case studies, it's not always just one of the benefits that you see. It's often kind of one, two, or three of those kind of key benefits that actually are kind of highlighted within the case study. I mean, we've included a few. For example, Waitrose and Cafe Nero. That was a really lovely one from My Waitrose that we looked at. Obviously, their history of offering kind of free coffees and papers was always one of those really loved kind of consumer benefits, and it caused a bit of a stir when they decided to remove it during the pandemic. So one of the examples that we've given for that more for less benefit was just how Waitrose and MyWaitrose used that relationship with Cafe Nero to not only bring back their free coffee reward, but in a much more kind of sustainable collaborative way. So not only did they bring in the actual kind of Cafe Nero coffee into the stores to actually give their customers a kind of better, more premium coffee to drink, but they also leveraged the loyalty program together. So actually you could combine your MyWaitrose and your Cafe Nero app for additional benefits on both sides. And through that as well, Cafe Nero launched their range of at-home coffee options. So things like pods and things that were completely new products for them. They managed to launch with Waitrose and generated a whole bunch more of kind of PR and interest through that partnership that would have cost them a lot more if they were kind of going through those kind of traditional marketing channels for that launch.
Fantastic. Love it. Absolutely love it. It is fascinating how I think often what I'm seeing more of as well, and what you've just described, is there's the loyalty bilateral relationship. So, you know, the coffee with the Waitrose program, but then there's the traditional relationship of distribution, right? So, you know, the coffee brand needs to distribute through a retailer and have that partnership. And for the customer, they don't see these pillars that we operate in. You know, we operate with buyers and sellers and procurement and loyalty program managers, but the customer, it's just a couple of brands that they want to interact with. And to be able to get that cohesive offering across the board, across multi-channel, is so important. So it's really nice to hear you describe that. Thank you very much. So I mean, Charlie, you've described like the impact of the stats and so on, but what is the real, like the real impact? Like what's the take-home value of this? Like why are we even talking about this stuff?
Yeah, and we always round out the white papers with looking at what are the national benchmarks for impact and loyalty program. I think it's really important as a loyalty program owner that we take these with a pinch of salt, because obviously the impact varies by your sector, by your customer base, by your brand, by your business case. But actually, when we started doing the white papers, we were like, why is nobody talking about the impacts of loyalty programs? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm privileged. I sit with a lot of our clients and I know what the return on investment is on a loyalty program across multiple sectors. And we know how, you know, huge that is. But of course, nobody wants to share that information. So we thought it would be really useful to provide them, the British people and British people working in loyalty, with some sort of benchmark stats. So we split them into six core metrics. So we look at functional impact and emotional impact. And in our functional impact stores, we see a 58.6% increase in frequency as a consequence of being a member of a loyalty program. So I will shop more often. A 47.6% I am more loyal when I am a member of your loyalty program. And 43.2% of the British public, even in a cost of living crisis, saying I spend more with a brand when I'm a member of its loyalty program. Now, those are huge and some really easy to calculate contributors to a business case, kind of behavioral, hard metrics. However, we adhere to the Forrester principles. We think about emotional loyalty and we actually know and recognize how important that emotional loyalty is for the longer term relationship as well. You know, this isn't a transactional loyalty market. We have moved on. So we also look at three emotional metrics. So 48.2% of British adults will say, I find a brand more appealing when I am a member of its loyalty program. 38.9% will recommend that brand more when they're a member of its loyalty program. And 31.6% say they feel more emotionally connected to a brand when they're a member of its loyalty program. And the value there versus what you'd be looking at in other marketing disciplines is enormous, you know, and I promise that all the data we have is fully validated and fully robust. So a really strong impact on behavioral loyalty, a really strong impact on emotional loyalty. This year, we had a lot of debate about should we be thinking about other KPIs for loyalty? Should we be thinking about corporate social responsibility KPIs? Should we be thinking about sustainability KPIs? But we have as yet to see programs demonstrating those KPIs in the market. So for now, we focus very much on the transactional and the emotional. But I'm really hoping that by 2026, when we run this research again, we will actually be looking at, you know, what impact are those loyalty programs having on people, society and the planet? I think that's something really important for us all to be thinking about. But for now, very strong impact on behavior, very strong impact on emotion.
I love the emotional metrics, because I mean, the transactional metrics are either, you know, that as you say, you feel like the market's moved into a more emotional state, and transactions are so easier to, it's easy to measure once it's in place. But I was on a webinar recently where we were trying to rack our brains over the most robust way of measuring emotional loyalty. And other than the stated emotional state, and Nick, sure, that's, I saw you nodding very much so when Charlie was talking through this. I think this is probably the most sound way of measuring it, right? I mean, otherwise, how do we measure that? So it's great that you've put those stats in there. We also ask a number of emotional type questions, like we call them the loyalty motivators, in the South Africa paper, and it actually gives you an insight that no business case can give you at the end of the day, but very few boardrooms maybe sign off on the CapEx investment based on some of those emotional statements. So
exactly. But then I think what's so interesting, you know, I know you're a similarly huge fan of Rory Sutherland as I am, and the behavioral science approach and what we can learn in loyalty marketing from behavioral science. And that's one of the things I find so fascinating in this research is actually, you know, research is a complement to psychology. And actually, if you think about us as humans and individuals, actually what drives us is emotion and is the positive experience. And actually, I think the two inevitably have to work together. And sometimes I think that maybe we've just relied on those transactional metrics because they're easier to measure. And actually, maybe we should all be thinking about or impact on brand I love, you know, brand that suits my lifestyle. I wonder if the true value is there. So I think it's such an interesting area. I think we need both. But I wonder if in the long term, as we get smarter and we get smarter kind of methodologies, actually we will drive more to the emotional ones.
I think there's also a degree of that system one, system two thinking at play. Quite often, you know, the system one thinking is like, oh, you know, it's going to give me more value. We're going to save a bit of money. But actually, that's quite short term. That's our initial response. But actually, the longer term system two thinking, so I have a really strong affinity with this brand. I agree with their voice of brand, what they're saying, what they stand for, their ESG impact. Like Charlie, I find the psychology behind consumer behavior absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, keep measuring it. And I'm sure within the YouGov data, there's all sorts of other exciting pieces of data that doesn't even make this white paper that could back up a lot of that thinking. So I think we're going to definitely have to save that for another day, because we're running out of time. And I could genuinely sit here and just ask you questions all day long. So my final question to anyone who'd like to answer it is, the audience of Let's Talk Loyalty is beyond Great Britain, and there's a global audience. So what would you say is the most transportable insight for non-Brits who are listening to the show? Because I know that it's worth downloading, even though I'm not based in the UK. I'm hoping that other white papers around the world are worth downloading because of the insights that also come through.
I think that's a great question. And I think it's actually a mindset rather than a piece of data, I think, is the most interesting thing that a global audience can take from this white paper. You know, be curious, look at what's going in the other markets, as much to learn from who's doing it well as to learn from the cautionary tale. I think it's just as interesting to learn and look at what's working and what isn't working. And I would encourage everybody to look at the British paper and then challenge it from your own markets or your own sector's point of view. You know, actually, what can I take from this? What makes me do better? And actually, what don't I like? And what do I want to do differently? So I think that curious mindset is really key. And that's certainly what we do at Mando Connect. You know, we look at all the research and we look at all of it and we see what we can apply, both to make our own research better, but to make our own work better. I think there's a lot we can learn from each other. So yeah, be curious would be my key takeout.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Okay, before I wrap up, any other points from any of you that you'd like to leave the audience with? Anything we've missed? I know we've thoroughly talked this through, but Anything else before I wrap up? So the joy for me is this gig isn't over either, because I get to talk to you all, maybe not James, but your colleague who is looking after the European paper, in a month's time. So from everyone listening, Let's Talk Loyalty, there's the European version of Manda Connect with YouGov and the insights that across, I think, Charlie, 29 countries, you said, is that correct?
almost 24
markets. Okay, well, we can round it up almost, but
yeah, I think that's fine.
Many European markets, so that I can't wait for that discussion, and that makes my role so much more exciting because I get to talk about this over and over again. So from Let's Talk Loyalty to the three of you, thank you so much. Congratulations on a phenomenal piece of work. I certainly can't wait. I'm actually lucky enough because I got a pre-read so I could do this interview. So I can't wait to actually read it properly now with a bit more time on my hands. And honestly, from the world of loyalty, thank you. The industry is very grateful for the work you do. Well done.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Loyalty. If you'd like us to send you the latest shows each week, simply sign up for the Let's Talk Loyalty newsletter on letstalkloyalty.com. And we'll send our best episodes straight to your inbox. And don't forget that you can follow Let's Talk Loyalty on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And of course, we'd love for you to share your feedback and reviews. Thanks again for supporting the show.